Blog Talk Radio.
Special all about Frankenstein. I am Pretty Bird, and my co-host this evening is the one and only Rockin' Tori. Say hello, hello. Well, there is that. I see you speak monster, so that'll be fun. So that opening song was by the Misfits. The Ghost of Frankenstein came out in 2011 on their album, The Devil's Reign. And I think that song is fabulous. Of all the Frankenstein songs that I was going to say fondled, that's not the right word, that I flipped through today, this would be my favorite one. And there's also a movie came out in 1942 by that same name. And so let's talk about business. For those who are new out there on the interwebs who happen to stumble across this little show, we are a team of voices, and we're a group of wonderfully kind and fabulously talented people that can be found on allpoetry.com. Almost forgot the name of that for a second. How sad is that? On allpoetry.com, it is free to join. So head on over to the world's largest poetry site, and while you're there, look up a team of voices, knock on the door, we'll let you in, and you too could be on the radio. So we already have a caller. Say hello, hello. Adam, is that you? So am I the only non-monster today? And so hello, I'm so glad you can join us.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much. Oh, well, my pleasure. It's a raconteur. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Frankenstein, your history of Frankenstein, what Frankenstein means to you, and all things green and ghoulish.
In the history of our writing and sharing on the site and everything, I don't know about anyone else, but I mentioned bits and pieces a lot. And when you said Frankenstein, my mind went right to that idea of the bits and pieces and the collecting of body parts and the bad brain and the inability to speak and just, you know, grunting and things like that, the flat head and the bolts in the neck. So my mind went spinning when you just mentioned the topic. What was it? Boris Karloff, that was one of his, I think, favorite roles, back in the TV days. I think he played Frankenstein as well as Dracula both. And then, you know, of course, Frankenstein had the obligatory appearance on Abbott and Costello. You know, Abbott and Costello, Frankenstein. Mel Brooks had to parody it. So there was that was epic. Young Frankenstein. He replaced Igor with Igor, things took a downturn from there.
I have to say, my favorite modern-day Frankenstein was a TV show I stumbled upon on Netflix a few years back, and it's like one season or something. It's not very long, and it's very dark and very British and very, you know, in the era of the plague, and I absolutely loved the madness of it. I thought it was really well written. And, you know, so about Mary Shelley and her fabulous dream child or nightmare monster, whatever you want to call it. She was 18 when she wrote Frankenstein or The Modern Prometheus, which is a fabulous title. She was 18, and it was published anonymously when she was 20 in January of 1818. And I don't know if you all have actually read this book, which is brilliant and scientific and fabulous. And it goes into okay, first, little background on me and my mental thing when it comes to science. I love science. I love science fiction, but I love science fiction horror that becomes reality. So they go into great detail. She goes into great detail talking about galvanization or, you know, shocking things to life. And it was practiced and taught ish. You know, at that time, but they would go and do crap on their own, like all modern day interns wanting to go and learn things off on the side, and what happens about this, and everything's an experiment when you don't know nothing. And I absolutely love that they went into that, and they're talking about this gallery and that gallery, and learning this and learning that, and yada yada blah blah blah. I mean, that's back in the days of what is the word, trepanation. I could be wrong. Let me just look that up before I sound like an idiot. Oh, no, I'm not an idiot. I am fabulous. And that is where they drill a hole in your head to let out the demons, because that's what they did. They thought you were crazy. Of course, we're also talking in a time when, you know, women had hysteria, and we're not going to delve into how they fixed that because it ain't Sunday. But, you know, times were a little odd. And we have another caller. Hey, Hatter, say hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
So we are just giving a little background on Mary Shelley, and, you know, how twisted does an 18-year-old girl back in the 1800s have to be like, you know what, there ain't no perfect man, let me just, you know, pick up a couple of good pieces off the dead guys and see if I can shock them back to life. I mean, that is a fabulous story.
Yeah.
She had to be
a little frustrated to begin with, because she had to use a man's name.
Well, it was published anonymously. So I don't know that she used any name.
I think mainly of her poetry, a short story.
Everybody had to be a man back then, because women didn't exist for anything other than baby making.
Right.
Because, you know, times were rough back in the day. So
Adam, back in, well, she could have. Yeah, she could have, but she invited a bunch of problems by using a woman's name.
Oh, I'm sure. And then they wouldn't have taken the writing seriously anyway, because, like I said, as far as she's just looking for a man, because that's all. We won't go back into the sign of the time. So, Adam, what is your history with Frankenstein?
I mean, very similar, I would say, to, you know, the pop culture sort of version of it, you know, just, I do kind of vaguely remember that Robert De Niro version where he played Frankenstein. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I kind of remember that. I always liked the idea, though, and, like, the, I guess the poetic notion of it, you know, he's not, I don't, more than anything, you know, her, you know, yeah, that's a, what an interesting thought, you know, from a young person to conjure up so unique and mind-bending and world-bending, you know, in the, you know, taken from the experience of her time, you know, with brilliant work, you're right.
Well, and, my favorite part is that we shock people twice every gosh darn day. We chop pieces out of one person, put them in somebody else, and now it's medicine. And,
right.
You know, back in the day when, you know, they were lobotomizing people and, you know, and a loud woman was hysterical and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And here it is, you know, with lightning and having to just believing that they can do all this. Now they have transplantations where they keep the lungs alive and breathing in a machine before they from one donor to the recipient. And I'm like, that's not freaky, it's fine. But you know, you gotta love when science fiction turns into reality. I mean, even Star Trek and their little flip communicator nonsense, and now we're all on our phones. And we had flip phones, and we were all, you know, in the zone. And I think it's wonderful because, you know, you don't know what you can do until, you know, you have an idea, and why not? You know? What's the worst that can happen? Nothing?
How far away are we from Futurama with the heads in a jar?
Well, there is that, which reminds me of the man with two heads. My dog is making a mess. Give me 2 seconds to be back, but Rack, run the show. Give me 1 second.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was thinking that when you were talking about, you know, shocking to life and everything, and, you know, when I was talking about Frankenstein, I left out that epic part with the major storm and the lightning bolt that brought him to life, and then, like you said, here we are now, we've got the paddles, you know, charging, clear. I mean, that's fantastic, you know. There's a lot of there's actually, I think, a website that counts the instances of where sci-fi got it right, and they have lists of movies that real actual science, you know, things would derive from later on that, you know, they predicted basically. Either the person that invented it got inspired by it, or, you know, it just happened to coincide with the actual invention of things. It's really wild.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
It's all about perspective, I think. You know, some people look at something like you were saying, and back then, you know, that they were calling things, you know, crazy or hysterical or, you know, whatever they were trying to make of it. And now it's like, you know, yeah, I guess they were right.
I mean, let's take the Jetsons. You know, that they were fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And what a big deal it was that futuristic space-time, whatever, was all video calls in an instant, and apparently we should have flying cars any second, according to that science. So
we do have vehicles that can fold into a suitcase.
We have what that folds into a suitcase?
Well, I think it's a scooter that does. I don't think they've actually gotten a car to fit into a suitcase, but there is a scooter that you can actually fold, and it goes into a suitcase-sized bag that you could actually carry it around with you for travel.
Well, there you go.
Pocket bike.
That is amazing. So I'm absolutely loving all of this. It makes me wonder, you know, why you know, I was going to say we as a people, but, you know, why people in general are fascinated by monsters, or maybe not so much the monsters themselves as, you know, how human, or, you know, humanity remains when they turn, and how strong a will there is in that fight between supposedly good and evil. And I say supposedly because poor Frankenstein didn't have a choice, and there was nothing wrong with him. You know, it's not his fault, and he's not. So where do you guys fall on who's the monster? Not just in name, because the monster is the monster and the doctor is Frankenstein, but like, what's more, who do you think is more of a monster? The one who, you know, chopped up the dead people to make a new man, or the abomination that he created?
Well, it's gotta be the doctor, the brain of the doctor. Now the whole concept of monsters, basically, it was known that the grave robbers, like Da Vinci, he had guys dig up graves so he could come and perform, cut into the tissue so he could learn to draw the human anatomy by muscle tissues or the bone structures. So he was brought bodies. That's Da Vinci. A lot of them did that. The artists, if caught, they would have been severely punished. I don't know, exiled or hurt or stripped or imprisoned. But it was known that the grave robbers, the rumors and stories that went along with it was, you know, rebuilding from the dead. So the legends of the eerie tales were already existed, so that might have helped with the beginning of the legend of monsters.
Wake up in a tub of ice with no kidney.
Yeah.
Well, that. And then you've got historical figures like Vlad the Impaler that you know, were fanciful stories were weaved around him, because how can anybody that does that not be evil? But, you know, evil back in the day was anybody who wasn't, who didn't abide by societal expectations.
Right.
So
the church.
And that kind of makes all of us a little evil, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, we don't want to do frogs in biology class, you know.
My seventh grade teacher brought a big giant toad from her yard because the school didn't have enough money for her to get frogs, and she killed it right in front of her face, and it was not okay.
I remember certain people having to get a note for biology class because they didn't want to have to go through that. You know,
I took anatomy in high school.
But it lacks the, like, I would, if I was king of the world, and the world was a lot smaller, I would make it so that every young adult in their teenage years, like their high school, junior, senior year, spend at least 2-3 years on a farm, a ranch, to understand the life and death. In reality, animals die. They're harvested. They're also birthed. As many deaths as there are births, and to raise, to know a living creature from birth and then raise it as not property but as a asset. I think it.
I've sat
people
at a
don't
calf.
Realize. Well, they don't know where the steak comes from when they buy it. You know, they don't want to. They're totally against slaughtering animals, but they go buy a T-bone. They just don't know where ground beef comes from. Because they don't have the...
Well, that's just ridiculous. I had my 4-year-old and my 10-year-old watch them after they shot the cow, because they didn't see that. But they absolutely watched it get skinned and gutted and cut into sides. And I was like, we'll be back in 2 days because we need to fill our freezer.
How old were they?
4 and 10. My 4-year-old would not stay in the car. Yeah. He was just like, no, I'm getting out of my car seat by myself. I'm watching. I was like, all right. Didn't stop him from eating nothing. He was just like, oh, okay.
Something's going on. I want to watch.
I think those ages would be more acceptable to that process to witness that than it would be in their teens.
Well,
the teens, they weren't subjected to that.
It depends on their particular sensitivities, I would think.
I don't know
how any adult raises a child to not understand that beef is cow and pork is pig. You know, that makes no sense to me.
And McNuggets don't exist.
If you want to make somebody stop eating chicken, take them to a chicken farm.
To watch them hang by their feet and have their next life.
Well, just a slaughterhouse. I mean, it's a fact of life, and it's cruel. If you want to look at it as cruel, whatever, but that's reality.
Some ways they do it are cruel. Some ways aren't.
Yeah,
it's just, I'll tell you what, I've seen it, and I was raised on a farm. I'll tell you what, the processing of a chicken or turkey will make you.
I had 13 chickens.
I mean, well,
so,
I can grab a chicken by the head and twist
its head clean off.
I'm not talking one chicken, one steer. I'm talking hundreds of them, one after the other.
Yeah, it's bad. It depends on how they do it. If you know, and not that I want to get into that now, but there are ways that are humane and ways that really are not. And I would be more concerned not with their death, but with their standard of living, because you know it's all about money.
Absolutely. But to those that don't realize where that porterhouse steak came from, to see the process is not only an eye-opener, it could be a life-changing event. You would probably be a little more accessible, as I would, too. Because
well,
I was born and raised in a beach town city. But I know people. My ex-wife would have been one. She'd never eat chicken again if she had to witness that. It's just the realities that the people take either for granted, or they're just not aware, or they don't want to know.
I cannot. Well, that's more like it. I thought they don't want to know, because I can't imagine that anybody with any semblance of intelligence gets through high school without knowing that a cow is beef.
Yeah, but how long do they dwell on it? I mean, do they really talk
they
about
to?
It? Do they really get the business? This is the way of surviving. You know how a first responder survives? You know how a first responder survives his gore that they will be witnessing, the traumatic events of what a human body can go through, and the way they
survive, they compartmentalize.
It's a gallows humor. It's a gallows humor. It's a way to protect your own self from that. Certain people can do it, other people can't. But to survive it, they all developed what they call the gallows humor. It's just a way of dealing with it. Because it's not pretty.
Of course it's not. It's not pretty. But it's for the greater good. You're saving lives. So that makes sense.
I agree with you. I think everybody should go through that, to have that.
I don't know that everybody should go through it. They should know, and then they should make a choice.
How can you defend one way or the other if you've not witnessed?
You don't have to witness it to feel strongly about it. I don't believe in cruelty to animals, but that doesn't mean that I had to stand there and watch the dog get beat.
Well, I understand that, but in order for your argument to have credence one way or the other, I think you can have
empathy without having to have the full experience. So I do agree that everybody needs to learn. I don't agree that everybody needs to witness it firsthand.
Well, if you're going to have somebody, you're depending on somebody or you agree with somebody that's going to defend or attack that process,
But we're not Hatter. You know I love you, but this isn't about, you know, the animal slaughter. We're all about Frankenstein.
I agree, but I'm talking about life and death. Kids nowadays, they get so desensitized to death. The video
they get
tape,
desensitized
the video game,
to kindness
the
watching
movie.
Video games. So, you know, this modern day Instagram life has changed children.
You know, it's not necessarily even that. You know, you're talking about witnessing someone butchering an animal. There's people with twisted minds that would take perverse delight in that and be like, you know, I want to do that. And then, you know, the next progressive thought in some people's heads would be, well, what if I did that to something that wasn't a cow, you know? So,
I don't know that it doesn't usually spark that way. It's usually the spark is there, and then it grows out of curiosity, not necessarily from that. That it would be a rarity. They have to have the mental proclivity, and by the time they're old enough to, you know, want to go and see that on their own, it's because they want to go and see that on their own, you know? But to steer the conversation back to Frankenstein, if you don't mind, because we're 15 minutes into, you know, slaughterhouses. So what is your experience, Hatter, with Frankenstein? Time you saw Frankenstein or read Frankenstein?
The first time, it was very traumatic. I was very little. It was a black and white late night show on. I was probably not supposed to be up. I was with my brother. The original black and white, the first
1942
movie that had Dracula and driving stakes through their heart, which was very graphic for a kid. But the Frankenstein was the same way. I was too young. I was very very frightened of the idea because I was not introduced to it properly. It was more a frightful event. I always loved Halloween, so I embraced it as much as I spent thousands of dollars scaring kids. Frankenstein's part of that. I understand the fear that doesn't go too far, but the fear that every kid basically wants to be scared at some point. And I'm not saying every kid, but some different degrees, some kids like to be scared a lot. The haunted houses that they go through willingly to be scared. I embraced that. So the first Frankenstein was the actual the torch. I remember the torches, the townspeople chasing the monster to the silo? Was it a silo or something?
Fire bad.
Yeah, fire bad.
I'm in a haunted house, me and my friend, in the back of her backyard, and it's wooded back there. So we took big old sheets of Visqueen and made a maze. And in each of these, and we had these rooms off the side of this maze, and we manned it with people. I did everybody's makeup because I'm ghoulish that way, and we scared the bejesus out of so many people. And I was like, that is awesome. I scared the crap out of my own kid, and he saw me put my makeup on, and it was the best thing ever. So I'm like, if you're going to let your kids go in there when I'm telling you it's scary, I'm going to scare the crap out of them. We're fine. I was scaring teenagers. You know how hard that is? It was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
It's just time to get a job.
I spent my whole childhood with my brothers making little scary rooms with any devices that we can. And so I had a whole young my childhood dreaming of things to do at Halloween. So when I became an adult, had a good job, had my own house, had money to spend on Halloween, that's what I did. real elaborate haunted houses. Our whole house would change to a haunted house from about the beginning of September through Christmas.
What kind of candy did you get?
What kind of what?
What kind of candy did you give away? Were the kids walking
candy.
Around grumbling about what you put in the bag, you know? I got a rock.
We were the candy apple kind of family.
I was all the mini chocolate bars. I'm always the mini chocolate bars.
We invite them in. Come on in.
Yeah, those were the old days, man. I miss those days. When I was a kid, we actually went on Halloween. We actually went out at night. Our parents chaperoned or adults chaperoned. It wasn't what it is now, this whole fiasco. Anyway.
Yeah, my kids still go.
We got, when it started getting dark, we could go until Halloween, until about 10 o'clock, I guess it was. Yeah, that's pretty late for back to as fast as we could. We didn't even run home to get another bag.
Yeah. you go behind the house and switch costumes when we're giving out the full-size candy bars.
My kids are smart.
Oh, yeah.
They have their pumpkin or their bag, and then they have a pillowcase that they dump it into, whatever gets full. So the grown-ups hold the pillowcase. And, of course, their payment is whatever snacks they want to pick out of it. And they just keep on with their pumpkins.
I remember my older brother.
We had double
paper bags. We used double paper grocery bags. And some kid knocked my older brother's bag and ripped it. I don't know how he did it. Grabbed it and ripped it. And the candy went out everywhere. So these kids were pushing my brother away. I went in there flying tackle like a WWE wrestler over the ropes, flying through costume and all into this guy who was trying to steal my brother's candy. No, you're not.
the modern day thieves now will take a razor and slice the bottom of your purse.
Yeah, not okay.
Yeah.
What's funny is I am much more gore and latex makeup. I make my own wounds and stuff for my kids. And so if they're going to tell me that they want to be this zombie or this roadkill or this, one year my oldest wanted me to look like half of his face exploded. So I'm like, all right. I said, and so I made all the sinewy things, keeping his lips together enough for a straw to go in there so he can drink. But his face was just all jacked up. And there were several houses that year that looked at him and said, close the door, turn off the light, and wait until he was gone.
Three birds, you're a late woman after my own heart. Yeah,
I have that haunted house.
Wait, you use the gelatin?
No, I use toilet paper. Toilet paper and latex, and I lay them out beforehand. I paint them. I put makeup on everything. They are form-fitted.
Yep.
And for the haunted house that looked like a murder scene, I dipped a switch in a quart of fake blood and flung it everywhere. It was awesome. All the blood splattered. It was the best thing ever. I had so much
we'll
fun.
Have to
it's
go
not ahead. Even funny.
We'll have to go over the schematics of some of the haunted houses we constructed today. Scene by scene, even to where I built a coffin with inside red velvet cushion. That's pretty wild.
That's fun. But that's the good stuff. That's, you know, when you're little, it's fun because there's candy and you get to dress up. But when you're older, it's all about, you know, scaring the bejesus out of people. That's the best part.
I've always embraced that if they give you one night a week or a year that you could scare the hell out of kids and not get in trouble, I embraced every bit of that. But
absolutely,
I was humbled to the fact that the sheriff can be called, and they were one season. Because I always had, if you wanted to come up and get candy from my front door, I would let you. If they were little kids, I didn't scare them. Because there was two ways of entering or exiting my front door, my porch. The bigger kids rarely made it to the front door. The little kids, of course, I would. But somebody got a little wet one time. Sheriff was locking on my door.
Water?
My fault, they fell.
What fell?
I soaked the front yard so nobody could escape a certain way. They had to go back a certain way as they came.
What did you soak it with? Just water?
Yeah, I soaked the yard and somebody slipped and fell and ruined their costume. And they went home and the parents called the cops on me. I don't know what the story to them was. I didn't push anybody. They did it to themselves. But the sheriff can't be called.
He soaked the yard in cow urine. Was really cow urine.
Yeah, some girl, so. Anyway.
One of the best things I've seen. Do you remember that girl from, like, The Ring, that movie that came out of the TV all creepy?
Yeah.
Okay, there was a girl. The house was, it looked barren, and it was on a hill on a corner, and there were no lights, no nothing, and an old white nightgown, which is this girl crouched in that kind of crouching position that I haven't been able to do since I was six, with her long, scraggly hair and her face, pasty, pasty girl, and I'm like, oh, no. That's a person. And then she moved, and the most creepiest, slowest thing, my kids were like, ah, and I was like, that's hysterical. I was like, you're awesome. And because she was really creepy because it was dark and there were no lights, and she was all white with the black hair, and it looked like it could be like one of those little statues because she was scrawny. And but oh no, she was just moving and turning her head as they're talking about her, like she hears you. Oh, it's fabulous. What did it for the kids though is that she was moving her head very, very, very slowly. Then all of a sudden she cocked it like to the side like a dog that says, huh? And they lost their crap. It was hysterical. It was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So who wants to go first tonight?
I'm sorry.
You're fine. So who wants to go first tonight? Did you write for us, Hatter?
I did, yes. It's not very scary, so you want to start off with a not scary one.
Yeah, that'll work. Put it up. It's not on, I don't see it on the topic board, so just go ahead and put it on the chat wall.
Yeah, okay. I can do that. And we'll see how this goes. It really was a stretch, and we'll see if I get away with it. Frankenstein, man. Frankenstein, okay. So shall it be. Goes like this. They came to fight with no warning labels. Fame was worn by the soldiers who were more than just able. Steinberg and Franklin accredited team from beaten at war, so it seemed. Across the courtroom they ran their races till all attended was written on their faces. Too long a defense... It took weeks and weeks. Time was an issue in order to keep shortened to play by orders delayed. The judge was not amused. Thinking too long, something was wrong. Took a sentence that wrongly accused. Divided by two, the list of days to hours to play the game. Delayed by permission, defend by conviction. No one here is to blame. Too much to share, to show that they care. Steinberg and Franklin changed. Lynn and Berg sounded absurd, so they tried another way. Berg took Stein, stating it's mine, and Lynn took Frank as if by design. Shorter is better by losing letters might sound a bit raw. So shall it be, lawyers are we, Frank and Stein, attorneys at law.
So Rack, why don't you go ahead and run comments?
That was brilliant, Hatter. That reminds me of a somewhat similar idea of a joke with it was Lord and Taylor. But anyway, I like Frankenstein, attorneys at law. Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe is my favorite law firm, though. This was, you know, beautiful rhyme and flow, and like you said, it's not so much that it's a stretch. It's you can't tell where you're going until you get there, which is the beauty of it, I think. You know, and you do it in lovely cadence. Adam, what'd you think?
I thought it was comical, and like you said, like right till it's like kind of wondering what is happening here, and then it gets sewed up nice with a bow. Just perfect at the end. Like it's a great gas, man. I love it. It's hilarious.
I was afraid of trying to expose where I was going too soon. I tried to keep it all
right.
And your flow and rhythm was perfect. It was like very, you know, had that perfect bounce, and it's, you know, carrying itself along in this. Good for a tale, and then. And then, you know, it almost brings that idea, or, you know, the monsters, lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's
scary.
Smart. It's funny.
Thank you.
They salvaged the dead. one of my favorite dad jokes is, where there's a will, there's a lawyer.
Hey, we had an attorney on one of the main boulevards. It was A. Scheister.
Oh, my goodness.
Really? Yeah. Oh, boy. No way.
That's unfortunate.
I think he thrived on that.
Come to A. Scheister.
Yep.
Oh, God. And Pretty Bird, can you comment for Mr. Hatter?
Absolutely. I love how it's Steinberg and Franklin, and you don't get that until the end where it's Lynn and Berg, and you're like, well, no, that's just not right. let's just fix this a little bit. And I love how you landed on that Frankenstein Attorneys at Law's brilliant twist, because you don't really see that coming. You know, you're following along, and it isn't until they hash out the name that it is like, ah, that's freaking fabulous. So, you know, I absolutely love that. You know, I know a girl who married someone named Frankenstein. Well, they say Frankenstein. And but, you know, it's Frankenstein. And it just cracks me up, though. So, you know, I know this whole Frankenstein family with the Frankenstein children and the Franken dog, and she is a good sport. She doesn't stop people with all the Frankenstein jokes every day of her life. She's just like, whatever, it is, what it is. And so that's awesome. I love that. So excellent. So, you know, scary in a way. Look at those lawyers.
And then there's the idea of, you know, that he took the bits and pieces of the name, like Frankenstein, and he Frankensteined the name.
You know,
if I used Steinberg and Franklin too early, you would see that.
Yeah, no, you didn't use it early at all. It was perfect.
The other clever thing is you put Stein first so that, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah,
Franklin.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys.
Did anybody think of how Lindbergh would be like stinky cheese? Or was that just me that thought that?
No, that's definitely some stinky cheese. That is, you know, I never could eat it because I just can't get past. Oh. I mean, I can eat some stinky cheese, but I can't eat that.
Yeah, you got to eat one or two little pieces first. It's not so bad.
No, I need to have a stuffed up nose where I can't smell it, and I'm not able to.
Limbo.
Nasty stuff.
Which is great for Halloween.
This is true. You know, I used to have these Halloween parties for the kids. What?
No, I was just thinking about putting some of that in my hallway.
You know, I used to go to my friend and I have kids that are the same age. And I mean, all of our kids had, like, we have four kids. Well, she has five, she has a set of twins, but her oldest went to school with my oldest. The next one was the same year. The next one's the same year. The next one's the same year. However many years apart they were, they matched perfectly, which I thought was hysterical because I didn't meet her until my oldest was in high school. And, so she used to have these Halloween parties. And so I used to go and we used to make the mummy hot dogs and I taught her how to make octopus hot dogs. And I always brought like finger cookies. Like I warmed them with fingers with the almonds for the nails. And the best thing that the kids loved were my earwax Q-tips. Cause it was basically a toothpick with the little marshmallows and you dip one in, you dip them in either chocolate or butterscotch, and so now they're earwax, and they just love the idea of the whole thing. They would always go, and I'm just like, y'all are just, ew. It was like, I would make hundreds of them, and they would be gone in like a blink.
I think I love you.
Yeah, you gotta do that. It's funny, because I like making cute food for the kids when they were little, but I have boys, I don't have any girls, so I would make butterflies that out of little cocktail weenies, you just like split like a half inch of the end of it and put like little crescent rolls, like you just roll them up and into four little balls right next to it, and it just grows and then when it split, it curves out like antenna. And my boys refuse to eat butterflies. They have to be moths. I'm like, fine, they're moths. Enjoy.
They're moths.
Yeah, they're like a moil.
Boys. Huh?
Like a moil. I got to listen to that conversation that you just said.
Keep the tip.
I have to replay it.
OMG. That's hysterical. Okay, so who wants to go next? You know what? I always have Phil at the end. Let me play him now. That way we can give him all of the comments. And this yes. And this is Sadness of a Monster, and he has a recording. Here we go. I don't know if y'all heard that, but that's my dog. She's having a conniption. Here we go.
I love it. Unmuted.
Well, it says it's playing, but I don't hear anything.
Yeah. Huh. Is it a SoundCloud thing?
It's a YouTube, and it's going. It's just, let me see if I turn it up. Nope. So blocked. It's in there and it's playing. It's just not doing its thing. So we will revisit him later.
He usually puts a link in there. It is.
He has a link in there. And it's in the studio.
Yeah, it's getting it from the link into the studio, Hatter.
No, it's in the studio.
Okay, you got
YouTube is messing with attempted copy detection.
Yeah, I got it covered.
Okay.
I'm just going to convert it on another app and put it back into the studio. So in the meantime, we can either talk more ghoulish things or we can put somebody else up while I do this. Either way.
You could throw me under the bus. Mine's brief.
Except for that you need a reader.
I got a story.
Okay.
When we were really small, now there's not 2 years between five brothers, between any of us, any one of us. And we had, my mom and dad went out for dinner, I guess, or went out for a party, which was a rare occasion. You count on one hand how many times they did that in my lifetime. But the neighbor gentleman was babysitting us. We were supposed to be in bed. He was out in the front room watching Twilight Zone. I snuck out on a dare from my older brother, snuck out of the room and crawled behind the couch and was looking over his shoulder when the William Shatner version of Twilight Zone, when the monsters turn the wing, you know which one I'm talking about?
Gremlins.
The monster's tearing the wing apart of the plane he's in, and he's witnessing this thing. So he shuts the curtains, but his curiosity is such that he has to open the curtain real fast, and there's the monster's face press up against the
window.
Airplane window. You know which version I'm talking, which episode I'm talking about?
Very well.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, I was looking over his shoulder at that very moment. He did the curtains, and I screamed. I was freaking terrified, scared the hell out of him. The neighbor's name was Jack, and I guess I scared the shit out of him, man. He never made Jack sit. Well, he's sitting there thinking he's alone. He hears this kid scream in his ear when the monster's face. All right.
OMG.
I thought I was scared. I think I scared him more.
Hysterical. They actually put that scene in the Twilight Zone movie from the 80s.
Yeah. That's very frightening. Very frightening. And it just happened to be me crawling out, looking over the couch right at that moment. Jeez. But I guess I scared the hell out of the neighbor guy. Never came back.
never came
back. It was definitely one of the classic episodes.
Yeah. Couldn't have been anything else. Had to be that one. I didn't even get in trouble for being up, for sneaking out there. They thought it was so funny. Of course, I couldn't sleep for weeks. Yeah. I screamed loud too. Boy, right in his ear. I was right behind him. Just get the fuck out of him, man. Excuse my language.
Do you know that you can scare somebody to death in real life? Usually, younger children it can literally stop their heart.
Little kids.
Some kids.
I would have figured it run the other way around.
No, grown-up hearts have been through so much that they're a little bit more resilient. So if they're going to have a heart attack, they're going to have a heart attack. But I don't mean having a heart attack. I mean their heart stops. If you catch it just right and that quick jolt fear hits them, it just stops.
Yeah, they say jumping off – if you were to happen to jump off a skyscraper or fall off a skyscraper, that you would probably be scared to death before you hit the ground.
Yeah.
How would they know that? I don't know.
Well, I guess the coroner could tell, you know, judge the cause of death. His heart stopped before he hit the ground.
Yeah, it's not the fall that hurt you.
It's the sudden
stop.
Yeah. It's not the fall, it's the sudden stop.
I love coming out of
hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the...
You had to look that up to make sure I wasn't lying.
No, I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was fascinating. I was like, wow, I never heard of such a thing. Like, you know, I've obviously heard of, like, people having heart attacks through it. And I was like, wow, that's weird and interesting. I wanted to look it up for that. That's why.
I am a font of interesting and useless information. Like, sharks see out of their skin.
Your husband just has to hope you never decide to dispose of him.
This is interesting.
Boo,
dispose
cool.
of him?
Yes.
My brain is completely disconnected.
Because you would do it in such a fashion that you'd never get caught?
Oh, this is true. Okay. We're going to try Phil again. Are you ready?
Yay.
Here we go.
This was a poem.
No, it's
had me for a second. Had me for a second. Dang, I wonder why.
The Blog Talk isn't taking MP3s. It isn't taking waves. It's not doing anything. So I'm going to just go ahead and let that play for a while in case it's got a long lead-in, and if it starts talking, we'll be quiet.
It says it's muted on the YouTube end.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know if you can go in there and turn unmute it, or I think he would have to do that, maybe. I don't know.
Because I can't undo anything to a YouTube file and that I didn't upload.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sad that we can't play it, but Adam, would you mind reading it?
Do you think Phil's piece? Would he be all right with that?
I'm hoping.
Okay, because this looks pretty good. Oh, that's what an honor. All right, cool. Sadness of a Monster. By Phil, the poet, read by Adam. Whose eyes do I see through, one blue, the other brown? Who formed my face so it wears a constant frown? Why is one hand big and clumsy, filled with deep scars, while the other is slim, able to paint light into the stars? Why is one arm muscular and strong, able to lift my woes? The other is weak, unable to pick up a quill to write a simple prose. It's so annoying how I walk with a limp and yet I want to run. I'm not a man, but a monster, cursed by the rays of the sun. Mirrors crack at the very sight of my reflection. Children scream and run when I come in their direction. Am I not a child newly created, wanting friendship and love? This is what I ponder as I look for an answer at the sky above. What are these emotions I feel of loneliness and sadness, with overwhelming hatred for this absurd madness? I have no soul, how could I, but a heart full of revenge. I'm a man of many infectious parts, needing to be cleansed. I have no understanding of love or joy. What do they mean? I'm just an illusion of some crazy madman's dream. I need to set things straight while there's still a moon before I return home to the bleakness of the tomb. End poem.
I do so enjoy his darkness. So, Raph, you're running all the comments for the night, right?
If you like. I thought this was absolutely fabulous. Great imagery, Phil. And, you know, the idea of the bits and pieces came out beautifully in this. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed from beginning to end, you know, and the contemplativeness of it, you know, the reflection on you know, the being and breaking it down into the bits and pieces is a beautiful metaphor for life itself, you know, and turning it into this, the idea of being a monster. You did a fantastic job with this like you usually do. Hatter, what'd you think?
Phil never ceases to amaze me. I always think, well, I've read his best. This is cleverly done. I like the part where he's struggling over having arms from two different people, two different legs. One stumbled, one wants to run. Great reference to being pieced together. I thought that was very cleverly done. And once again, the cadence of the rhyme is smooth. You read it really well, Adam. Very well. Yeah, on a list. For sure.
There you go. The juxtaposition of the parts, that came out awesome. The way that you point that out, that was really fantastic. What'd you see, Adam?
Oh, the same thing as everyone else. I thought it was great. The duality, the struggle of grappling with. You know, it's a very existential piece and reflective. This monster is like a new, like, is it a, and like, even it acknowledges, like, I'm a monster, I'm made, but I'm a creation, you know, and it has like an infant, but yet it's deep and, you know, what a great piece. It's really had me going all over the place in thought besides just the, you know, what's there. And it's a great piece, Phil wrote. I love it.
Oh, it's a bunch of pieces. Great comment. Thanks, Adam. And hostess Pretty Bird, what'd you think?
I think that I just love his shadows. Like, yesterday was the first one that I heard that him do dark. And then there's this one. And the solemnness, the pain that, you know, not only is he those mismatched, you know, patchwork, he's like this little, like, he's patchwork people, but he's like so innocent and so, you know, he just wants a friend and I like the line, like, this is what I ponder, to look for an answer to the sky above, because being so new, I can't imagine he's going to contemplate, you know, religion. So I go to the lightning that created him, and all kids are all about the wise. And it's a little heartbreaking, which is fabulous. And, you know, he doesn't understand. He has no understanding of this last stanza. You know, I'm just an illusion of some crazy madman's dream. But can you imagine opening your eyes, your heterochromic eyes, your one brown, one blue eye. I love that, by the way, like David Bowie. It's just fascinating to me. But and then to look down at your hands. And not only do they not look familiar, they don't look familiar to each other, you know? And I could you imagine just waking up from some god-awful accident and just looking at your hands and they're not yours. And that's got to freak you out. Or those people that they, you know, get shot in the face or they break their face, and not only do they have to be reconstructed and it, they're not going to look the same, but the ones that, like, need, like, that face transplant, how that's got to be so mentally difficult to not recognize your own self. You know, because we define ourselves by our hair, by our face, by all these things we've come to know ourselves as. And when that's taken away from you, it's hard to recognize that. Now, since we're talking Frankenstein, there's a movie called Body Parts from, I don't know, 1990-something or other. And I love the idea of this. This guy gets his arms chopped off, and they're having this new transplant thing, and they took his arms, and they sewed them on. And, hey, they work. It's an arm transplant, a double arm transplant. But he's an artist, and all of a sudden he starts painting these gory things, and then he goes, you know, and he wants to go and kill people. So the idea that our energy or part of our essence remains in our parts is a really interesting concept. So, you know, this is also, by the way, why when they had to redo my shoulder, I was like, well, you're going to try it like this before you're going to put a cadaver or anything in there. Because, no, I don't need anybody's leftover baggage in my head. We're good. Do I actually think that's going to happen as far as in an actual I'm going to get their thoughts? Heck no. But everything does have energy, so I don't want things to affect me in weird ways because I'm a little sensitive. But, you know, there's people with heart transplants that you know, feel different or lung transplant. And any of those, like, organs, they feel a little extra sometimes. And that's an interesting concept. So it's to not have any part of you recognizable, and not for nothing. They can transplant kidneys and livers and lungs and hearts.
Eyeballs.
Uh-huh, and skin. So,
yes.
Like, when you if they ever get to a brain transplant, or if they've had any success, I doubt they have. What exactly? So I'm assuming the brain is should house the personality. So what happens in those moments of death? But even if they're right next to each other, to take the brain out of one and put it in another is a little bit of death. So, like, what happens to all of those parts? You know,
abnormal.
Yeah.
Like Abby normal.
Exactly. So, you know, it's an interesting concept, and you know, something to ponder the efficacy. Geez, Louise, my brain can't speak.
You said,
you know, if it's ethical or not. You know. So
there's been a few movies and horror stories about that, about somebody get an arm sewn on that wasn't fair.
Well, they had one where they were literally transplanting the memories, like somebody that recently died, you know, they were murdered or whatever, and they would take the memories of that person and put them in somebody else so that they could identify the killer. And that was kind of the horror of this little movie/TV thing that I found. It was really quite brilliant, because it was the doctor that was doing it to torture, because she could, you know, they didn't think that she could transplant the memories, and they gave her the memories of a killer, and she didn't know that there was someone else's memories at first. So, you know, they convinced her that she was the killer. So it was really very interesting.
Yeah, I love that.
Where the thoughts come from.
Hello, Deborah Lee.
Hello.
You know, Rack, on that concept, there was a movie about the eye, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's like the shape of the, like, of the of your iris, like the little speckles in there are,
yes,
supposed to be like fingerprints. And so they were doing this whole entire thing of cataloging all of these eyes, all of these eyes, all of these eyes, all of these eyes. And they found a couple of matches from, you know, however long ago to now. And they were very familiar in some of their memories or some of their dreams or some of their things like that. But he watches his girlfriend die, in my worst nightmare, and I'm going to tell you what that is in a second, that the elevator was stuck between whatever, and he gets out, and he's taking her out, and the elevator goes and cuts her in half. So, yeah, this, no, I will stay in that elevator till I fix the damn thing. We're good. And then, like, 6 years later, they get a hit on their database of her little eye thing, and it's this, like, girl all the way across the world, and they're his office over there in India is upstairs, and she's fine, and she's all whatever, and he goes to take her in the office, and she gets to the elevator and throws a fit. And I was just like, ooh. And then it ends there. So I was like, gosh darn it. But, you know, I love the idea of little things like that, that, you know, little pieces of people remain. And it was an interesting way to talk about you know, your next life, so to speak. You know, like little things that transfer. This is how we come back. But that, you know, that's neither here nor there. So... Deb, what's your history with Frankenstein? Your thoughts on the book, the movies, the monster? Deb?
What did you say?
Oh. Hi. Sorry about that.
You're fine. So tell us about Frankenstein and your experience with him.
Well, personally, talk about admitting to being a dork. I cried because I thought they were so mean to him. It was just like, it was, how do you steal from graves and do that to someone? But then not only do it to them, but then decide, oh, well, you're pretty gross. Well, Dan, what did you think? Are you a plastic surgeon? Did you think it wasn't going to look different than you expected? And then, like, I think that, yeah, there was a blind man in the film / book / every, you know, multiple journeys that befriended him. And to me, that's ultimate proof of, you know, not to judge a book by its cover, because he couldn't see the damn cover, and Frankenstein was, you know, nice. He would get wood, and that sounded so bad.
only for the twisted
fireplace, firewood, I mean, you know, do little odds and end things, and then the poor thing saves a little girl, and they misunderstand and think he hurt the little. I mean, and then they shoot him, and they come after him with fire, and it was just like, and as a child, I was I'm still a mega horror movie fan, but it's like there's just something about that one, and I, you know, like the big girl in me knows that I'd be pretty horrified by some of the real things they've done to get us to the point where they know how to do a transplant, but I'll be damned if I want to meet somebody reanimated from the extra parts they didn't need, or so I don't. It's just that one seemed too much, and I mean, you know, yeah. I think I'm watching one movie where the man's transforming into a drooling or werewolf right in front of my eyes, and it didn't bother me as much as seeing that man with the staples in his head and all the scars picked on and driven. I mean, only one, it was a friend, you know, somebody, some human interaction. It's a horrifying story. Really.
It is. And you know, on a grander scale, it's all, you know, it's even modern day society with only the beautiful are worth a damn, you know, and it's unfortunate and miserable. And what is, how twisted was that doctor to be like, I can do this? Yeah, but why? I mean, it falls under that just because you can doesn't mean you should, you know?
Right? Yeah. And like,
so you are, go ahead.
Gross.
Yeah. And cool. You are on the board, Miss Deb, if you're ready to read.
Okay, dokie. And look how sad he looks in this photo. Anyway, this is called The Doctor. The doctor is the monster. Here we go. Dr. Gravedigger robs dead parts, sewing pieces like a patchwork quilt. Now stitches, electrodes, and staples bind the man that this monster built. Laying strapped on the wood gurney with wires tied to the two neck bolts linked to lines trailed out the window to charge his body with electric jolts. Metal secures the scalp to his skull. A scar lines his forehead and face. Puzzle piece organs fill up his torso. Threads hold cadaver skin in place. The man's just newborn to the world. He tips like the little teapot as he walks, like a toddler walks to mom and dad. Then with broken sentences he talks. This doctor abandoned him on sight, first inside himself, then in the forest, in the cold of darkness without food, shoes, a coat, or a place for him to rest. From a slaughterhouse to the woods, pain drives ache to the deadly crest. But in my eyes, the doctor's the monster. Creation never stood a chance.
Okay, Ham, Deb, you gave us a great picture. You know, you described everything beautifully. The confusion that you'd have to feel in that type of situation is summed up in that, I think. And the innocence of just being a victim comes out. You could feel the empathy that you brought out. You did a fantastic job with that.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the awesome comment.
Adam, can you comment for Deb?
Yeah, I was just finishing up my... you just said, right? The empathy just leaps from the page and the read. That was what really resonated with me, even before kind of like your discussion of the character. It comes through in your piece as well, and it really kind of wrenches out your heart for him, which as it should, I think. You know what I mean? It's like, what a great write. I see that it's another 10, right? Great job.
Yes,
you're on your way.
I know, four more. Can't stand it.
And it's great. I loved it. And it made me sad. I was like, I want to be his friend. I'll be your friend.
But thank you. Awesome comment.
Hatter, can you comment for Deb?
Yeah, it starts off beautifully. Dr. Gravedigger robs dead parts. Yes, Deb is getting very good at keeping her rhyme and still tell the storyline, which is a frustrating thing to do every time. But it must be the company that she keeps. In defense of the doctor, he wasn't mad.
He wasn't crazy.
He had the idea, the spark of the electricity keeps life going. He was just trying to be God. He wasn't being crazy. He tried to reanimate a dead person to eternal life, basically. So
sponsored by the IRS, no doubt.
His little God complex aside, it's like birthing a child and then deciding, no, you're not. You have a daughter, and I don't know, I wanted a son, and taking it out to the woods, or on a smaller scale, taking your dog for a one-way ride because you can't take care of it anymore. You get me started. Like women who toss their babies into dumpsters instead of taking it to one of the many no-questions-asked places you can take it to for women who can't have any kids. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Lack of human compassion is the worst.
Yeah, that's a good point, Deb. Frankenstein probably there would be no Dr. Frankenstein if the doctors were all women, huh?
Oh,
I don't know, man.
Women are sinister. And Dr. Frankenstein is a doctor.
I mean it by the ways of what Deborah said. They know what bringing life into the world is like. Men don't. We can imagine.
But they still throw the kids in the dumpster.
It takes two
to tango.
Part of the alchemy that is life. Don't cut us up in the knees here. Like, we're part of that process, definitely. We're half of the...
the gene pool, but you're not. You have like a
we do not
two
hold
second
the
part
child
of the process.
We are more than.
I guess we're on. Oh wow, this is getting a hot topic.
Whoa.
Well, that's not really a hot topic. I mean, the thing is, I mean, scientifically speaking, they have one job. It takes 2 seconds, and then after that, it is the mother's job to keep that baby safe.
Whoa.
I mean,
two
the
seconds.
DNA is absolutely 50% of the stuff, but as far as the whole miracle of life, that men can't do that. I'm just saying, physically speaking, they can't. It's not an emotional thing. It's not a gender thing. It's just a physical thing. But back to Frankenstein. Dr. Frankenstein was a medical student, and he was freaking doped up on laudanum. So yeah, he was mad, and no, he wasn't a doctor. Just so that y'all know. But we have a caller. And I'm not sure who it is. 303. Hello. My ask is calling.
Why, fabulous, wonderful, sweetie.
Hi, sweet. How are you?
I'm good. I've got a minute.
That is awesome. But let me comment on your poem because we went a little sideways there, Deb. I am loving that whole Dr. Grave Digger robs dead parts because that's just sinister and gross. But I'm loving that, after all of his trouble, after all of his trials and errors, out of all of his drug-induced euphoria, it's there. And then he's like, at the point where he's like, now they're coming after me, you got to go. it's sad. It is. It's like when your kid has colic, they're just like you were saying, and it's not what your kid has some unfortunate ailment that or disease or disfigurement that you can't deal with it. So, you get rid of it on the slide. Nobody knew you had it anyway. That's not okay. A dog that is tough to potty train and tears up your shoes, it's like, maybe I just didn't want a puppy. When you're in, you can't just leave things hanging. That's just not okay. You're absolutely right. And it's a heartbreaking story because this monster didn't ask for it. He can barely understand what the heck's going on. And the one person that he's ever known, that he trusted, it sends him, basically feeds him to the wolves to fend for himself, and he can barely, I don't even think that he was able to dress himself the way he was walking. I'm just saying. It's not okay.
Right? No, I agree. It's like, kicking the kid out of the womb and saying, okay, fend for yourself. But, along the way, you might get shot, and people might chase you with fire and accuse you of stuff you didn't do and slam you and slam you and slam you and slam you till you finally strike back. It's like the sweet little kitten that is driven back to a feral beast.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to dress myself till I got married.
I rescued a cat once that their owners moved and left it there for a month, and they came back once a week to drop drop a bag of food in the yard. And I was like, that's not okay. That's just not okay. And she was the sweetest thing ever. I loved her. So I'm glad I saved her. But it's horrible. You might, if you are moving and you can't take the animal with you, make provisions. Take it somewhere that it's going to be taken care of, you know? I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
That broke my heart.
Yeah, there was always our house.
Yeah.
Everybody dropped their pets off our house.
So we have Raconteur on the board, and he needs a reader. So who wants to read for Rack? I mean, I could read for Rack. Rack, do you have a choice? Or do you do, who do you want to read for you?
Flip a coin. I don't know. Maybe everybody read one verse like Frankenstein.
OMG. A patchwork poem. That's kind of a neat idea, actually. Adam, would you? I know that you read Phil, but would you mind reading Frankenstein by Raconteur?
I don't mind at all.
You're welcome.
All right. This is Frankenstein by Raconteur. Cherry-picking salvaged pieces and bits, then cobbling them all together. In the ensuing storm, a spark of life hits, predicating an insane endeavor. The resulting patchwork of stitches and scars takes on a life of its own. Under governance of moonlight and stars, we plummet headlong into the unknown. Is there a monster silhouetted in daylight, or is what matters totally misunderstood? Is our perception tinged by fright, obscuring the difference between malevolence and good? Who are we to challenge what we find, looking into a mad scientist's mind? End poem.
You see, I love this. There's an elegance in this semblance of a sonnet. I love that you actually added a volta at the bottom of that because and it's a proper thought ensuing volta too, because you know, sonnets have been in my existence. It may not be iambic pentameter, but it's a sonnet, damn it. And I love that it is. I love that cherry picking salvage pieces and bits, because you need the most viable parts. And even when it's broken up into, you know, organs and appendages, you still need the prettiest ones, the strongest ones, the best ones. And so it's like, you know, the same thing that we were talking about a little while ago. It's all about, you know, looks and things like that. You need the best to be the best and, you know, to have the best shot at life. And then it gets here and it's, you know, well, it is what it is. I love
so
that you use cobbling. What?
You're suggesting the monster was anatomically correct?
I'm just, no.
Oh, okay.
OMG, Hatter, you're so funny. Well, I'm assuming that if he's making a man, he's making a man. You know, you can't make a Ken doll. But, no, we were not going there. But I love that you used cobbling, because that is a very specific visual with those tiny nails piecing, pulling the skin over the bone and hammering it together. It was the perfect word for that and wonderfully graphic and in its visual vividity. So that is awesome. And I love that word patchwork. With the stitches and the scars. And I like stitches. I like the Frankensteins with that look like they're stitched up rather than the staples. It's just a little more personally involved and less clinical, and it looks creepier because it always tears and it's always kind of gross and it's always fabulous and sinewy. So I love that too. Is there a monster silhouetted in daylight, or is what matters totally misunderstood? Is our perception tinged by fright? Yes, it is, because fear of the unknown, fear of anything different, fear of anything weird, that is what makes people stare and gawk and tease, and it's easier to not say anything when you see somebody doing that than to defend what you don't know or what you're afraid of, or God forbid you have to talk to the weirdo. And so I kind of like that gentle view on that, you know, that you know, whose fault is it, you know? Is it his fault or is it ours for being asshats? So I absolutely love that. So Hatter, with your anatomically correct Frankenstein, what are your thoughts?
Let me get back to it. I lost the page here for a second. It was, once again, it's a very well pieced together, starting with cherry picking. I like that. Question. What would the sounds, if you were to be witnessing a doctor assembling a monster like that, what would the sounds be? Would you have rotor hammers, or would you have staple guns, or just saws?
It would be bone saws and a lot of the organs being sewn together. I mean, that's what I think.
So a lot of ow, ow, ow.
Well, he's not alive yet. You have to wait for the lightning.
I'm talking about the doctor sticking his fingers with the needles since he's threading them together.
Well, I would like to think that if he can, you know, create a guy from scraps, he's not completely inept.
He can at least do a baseball stitch.
You know, a running whip stitch, that's all you need. You're good. With your fancy hooks and things you don't have to touch with your hands. But so, Sweet, what are your thoughts on Rax Frankenstein?
Well, how do we please the creator and the muse, the hater and the lover? I mean, after all, we're all made of holy water. All we do is piss. So I love that he was able to bring all that together. Four monsters, silhouette and daylight, totally misunderstood. You know, the perception. Who are we to challenge what we find? Into mad scientist mind. I love that. Because we're both sinners and lovers and haters and monsters and all of that. So I thought it was brilliant to put together.
Absolutely. And Adam, you read it. What are your thoughts?
I'm along those same lines. It's a great piece. Great pieces just together. The line, great word choices. I like that. I feel that the stanzas are like the doctor's thoughts, and almost what I said kind of in my comment, I feel like they carry more of an empathy than we're used to from the doctor. Like they almost have maybe, I used the word curiosity of care for his creation. And then I feel like the last two lines actually come from outside of the doctor, you know, obviously, because I feel like they're almost a new narrator challenging the reader. It's kind of what I get from it. Like, maybe I'm just, I don't know. That's my own mind and take on it. I feel that way from it. I like the, because it kind of takes the stance of like, that the doctor doesn't seem to feel like it's a monster at all. Kind of like just more of this curiosity for his creature. He wonders about it, but he thinks that people, humans themselves, would probably have more of a problem, like other people, your commoner or whatever, would have more of a problem with his creation than he would himself. And, like, they're probably going to think I'm nuts. Yeah. I don't know, but it's cool. It's a cool piece. It really makes you kind of start to think and wonder a little bit more into it, the story.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's cool.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, now instead of thinking of the monster as a physical being, think of it as a relationship.
See, layers like onions, layers like onions.
Like best bros? Just wanted a buddy.
Well, you know, if any relationship,
well,
really,
anatomically correct relationship.
There you go. Fabulous. I have you on the board, Sweet. So I'm not sure if you have to run, and then after you, Adam, I'll put you up, and then I will finish with me. But it is 11:30, and let's go over what is coming up this week on A Team of Voices. So tomorrow night is Sky with Down the Tubes at 8 o'clock, which is nice and early. It's rough for me to make it early, but it's nice and early. And she has Reef Remains as her first prompt, Frogfish, which are just ugly creatures, as her second prompt, and the giant prehistoric predator dragonfly, which is creepy just to look at in a picture, and I don't do bugs. So that is tomorrow night. And I'm not sure if we have, yes, it says here we have Open Poetry on Friday with Liquid Damage at 10. And why don't you tell us about Saturday, Hatter?
Yeah, if I'm yakking on the mute. Yeah, it's all about beans. Holiday Saturday with AP Taylor and Deborah Lee. The prompt is beans. We'll have our collaboration between me and AP that Deborah pieces together.
Awesome. So now let's see. And then on Monday is Personal Prompt Monday with Ms. Deborah Lee. And she has artwork by Greg Crayola, if you can believe it, with all the colors. And there is a dog in this picture that looks like mine, so I'm going to hijack number two right now. Give me a second. Because except he looks like, I mean, if my dog wasn't fat and sweet and was all sad and depressed, it looks like my dog. So I'm hijacking that. And so that is all kinds of fabulous. Do you know your topic yet for next week, sweet?
I do believe I'm going to talk about the horror writer, Mr. Peter Straub.
Ooh, I do so love spooky season. And with that, my sweet, you are up.
All right. This is a little ditty about little Frankie's father. Under hallow lights and coats, and a coat of white, a monster roams. He walks the halls, playing God, watching shadows. Morning mirrors showing his delusions of honor. Chosen victims forever loyal, sewed lips tell no stories. Stitches placed with hands of grace, no blood was shed by his brutality. In sympathy and sadist foil, he claimed their bodies spoiled. An eye, a leg, a toe, an ear, a masterpiece in motions. A part too small or one too large, a shade too light or nail too blue, with a nose so red, a pint of whiskey lays in its valley. Flesh too stretched, eyes too marble, baths of acids too bubbled. Babies' names run off lips from Marky Mark to Frankie Frank. Whistling tune from Ozzy's crazy train. Time passes quickly. Electric shock induces flow as baby Frank starts to giggle. Legs and arms now discombobulate, and its face meets the floor. A 7-foot ball and all goes wrong, and baby needs a brain. So let it be known, shall no man or creature seek to match his cruelty or his talent, for lives to find the parts to fetch history. May no ghost seek revenge on the doctor or little Frankie's father.
You know, I almost wanted to say, because of all your mention of the music, Frank Zappa is where my mind went, because, you know, the Frankenstein and the storm, but yeah, nothing to do with that. It's the imagery you give us, and yeah, I just love the way you write. You have a way of bringing emotion to life. I think that's very, very you. And you know, I'm just drawn to it. I really enjoyed this suite. Adam, can you comment for Sweet Pea?
Yeah, this is cool. There's a kind of quirkiness to it that kind of comes about as we get, like, maybe, I don't know. There is this quirkiness, I feel, that kind of comes more about halfway through, maybe like right before. And it's kind of makes it a little more, I don't know. I like it. I like that. It kind of changes tone on me, I feel, in a good way, not like any other sort of way. That second stanza, I really love. It's great writing, and there's great writing throughout. I'm puzzled on the, for me, just puzzle pieces. Just the change of tone, I feel it comes sudden. Like, it's funny. It has a nice quirky funniness to it that kind of bubbles up, and I was kind of surprised by it. Like, it has a different tone at the beginning, the first three stanzas, I feel. Interesting piece.
Thanks, Bobby. And Hatter, can you comment for CP?
Who would have thought Sweet Pea was a little dark, a little twisted? yeah, this is the it was his baby, you know. I'm sure there was going to be a lifetime of love follows this. I don't know.
You know. You write, and some of my favorite dark pieces of yours sound like fairy tales, and it's like you are nursery rhymes, and you need like a whole book of your dark and creepy, like, nursery rhymes, because they're fabulous, especially when, and it should come with an audio file, because your voice gets sweet and soft, and you're like chosen victims, forever loyal, sewed lips tell no stories, and I'm like, ew. And but it's true. And so, you know, this is back before, you know, embalming was a thing. And so it was just, you know, let's make that, sew up this, sew up that, make them pretty, nice for the viewing, which, you know, not for nothing. Isn't that back in the time where they would keep the dead body in their living room for, like, you know, a week for everybody to come and visit?
The viewing,
you know, and then they buried it. So these are not fresh. Anyway, but I love that. But my I think my favorite part in this whole thing is a 7-foot fall and all goes wrong and baby needs a brain. And, you know, because it's just fabulous. I love this. I love that this fun little take on Frankenstein, because it can be so sinister and you know, but they shouldn't. And by the way, you're like Franken-cow, and I kind of love that.
Thank you. And Adam, to kind of answer your question, it does kind of change tune, because, like, in my head, I think he's a little dark and sinister while he's looking for bodies and everything. But then he kind of lightens up because he's building his son. So he's like, oh, he needs this ear, he needs this, you know. So he gets this joy out of creating his child. So he's just kind of like in his little laboratories, listening to his jam, and he's making his baby. So that's kind of a change in tune for me in my brain when I was writing the piece. So there's definitely a shift in attitude. And I really, to be honest with you, didn't even notice it until you pointed it out. Because it does kind of go into this, like, really dark kind of thing where he's, like, out there and he's looking at bodies and he's picking up people and he's, you know, sewing them up and he's doing his thing. But then, you know, he's in his lab and he's just listening to Ozzy and he's doing his thing. And that's kind of brilliant for you to point out, even to me, because I didn't even realize it. So that's pretty cool for you to point that out to me.
Awesome.
From Steinway to Baby Grand.
OMG. Are you ready to read, Adam?
Yeah.
More read. Reading of Elizabeth.
I had posted one piece and then I scratched it and went with this instead. This is called Self-Made. The monster was made from an obliteration of men, or a man, reflected many times in his breaking, the lens of a spiraling cacophony, barbed, devouring, shrapnel, raining, back into and upon, ripping flesh, rending him, wholly and solely apart from man and men, into the kiln of life it burns or tempers, both. Is he wicker mixed with red clay and mud? Flecks of tinder eviscerated in ash swept, the tears which manifest from emptiness. Or perhaps a soul and heart, cursed, raged, yet here now mended in the loosest sense of sincerity. Can muster any further from breaking, shatter. Only a monster can withstand or replace by the tentative care of a self saturated in hate, piece by piece rebricked, stitch by stitch rewoven, galvanized in the maniacal reprise of madness as love is, a concubine of those who wish to never release the phantom of things such as living. Though death is a kiss and release of pain, the glutton of man fights to live, a golem of self, a shadow of was, a wreckage rebuilt in purpose to survive, the harrowing strife of being. Being alive, a man reprised, monster, here and now, forever and after. I mangled my own piece and poem.
A good thing we got doctors on site to stitch you back together. I like
bad.
This. Towards the end, the death is that quote. Quote-worthy, and I'm not going to mangle it myself, but that was a brilliant thought right there. But the whole thing was a lovely journey. I like the way you put it together. Now I'm getting all clinical. Anyway, there's a lot of beauty in this, you know, for something that, you know, the subject matter being so supposedly creepy and scary. You softened up the edges of it and really made it philosophical and lovely. Sweet, what'd you think?
Sweet dropped.
Oh, Hatter.
Yeah, I like the way you put the little God syndrome in there by mentioning wicker mixed with red clay and mud. Where's the other part? I started. Only a monster can withstand or replace the tentative care of self, saturated in hate, piece by piece, rebricked, stitch by stitch. That's the unknown. If you were to be able to do that, piece together a body and then put a brain in it, what are the thoughts of others? How do they perceive things to keep calm and not go postal or go nuts? Was it you, Pretty Bird, earlier that you mentioned how would it be to wake up all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real deep thought, and a real one if that was reality.
Personification of muscle memory.
I'm getting everything replaced in my life right now. Everything I got two of is getting replaced.
Wait a minute, everything?
Well, not everything.
You're the one that threw it up anatomically correct. Just throwing the ball back in your court.
Oh, my.
Cooking away, kid, doll. Cooking away, kid, doll.
Smooth.
Well, I guess it's my fault for making the assumption that there were two to begin with. I don't know.
Well, I'm kidding.
This is nuts. I'm going off the rails. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. On that note, I'm going to comment. Okay, so I kind of love this. I love that whole into the kiln of life. It burns or tempers both. He is wicker mixed with red clay and mud, and I love how that's a question. Is he? And it's just that whole both, that whole duality of man, that whole all of these things. It's like just weaved throughout, you know. The story, all the Frankenstein stories, it's just all mixed up stuff, which is fabulous. But down here, where is it? Here now mended in the loosest sense sincerity can muster. I'm like, I mean, is it mended? I mean, it's almost like mended like you darn a sock, you know, where it's not rewoven, it's just kind of patched up, and I love that in the loosest sense sincerity can muster, because that it's just a very graceful way of saying he kind of butchered a body to create a body, butchered many bodies to create one, but right after that whole piece by piece, rebricked, stitch by stitch, rewoven, galvanized, which I love the whole idea of galvanization, the whole, you know, I love how, you know, you find a defibrillator basically everywhere people are nowadays, and I'm like, ooh, that's that, because to me it's all Frankenstein, you know, and you got to shock them back to life, and galvanize the maniacal reprise of madness as love is, and that is a very poignant thought, you know, that maniacal reprise of madness. And, you know, and they say love is a, you know, the king of all addictions, and it makes you do crazy things. I mean, so does laudanum, but, you know, whatever. And this is just lovely. Though death is a kiss and release of pain, the glutton of man, which, by the way, is my second favorite deadly sin, because, you know, I'm all lust. But gluttony is a thing. You know, there is gluttony and avarice and envy, and I think that all of it, pride, all of it, wrath is in Frankenstein, come to think of it. I mean, maybe not sloth. Maybe. You know, laudanum does make you kind of slothy, but it never even occurred to me that it's like all the sins in one place, except for lust. It has no place in Frankenstein. No. And so I absolutely love that it sparked my brain into ideas, because you got to love words to make you think or feel, which is fabulous. So now it is time for my little piece. It's not really Frankenstein-esque, but I did write, so that is something. Did I just put you back up there? I did. Hold on a second, because I know who I am. It's fine. I mean, I'm lips, and I'm way down here at the bottom. I don't know how I put you back up there again, but now this is me.
Yeah.
Okay. This is check, please. And it goes like this. I checked the box, the smallest gesture in a youth that was never as wild as it could be. Decades in blinks, lying on a table waiting for the whispers to stop. With a saw and a song in eager cavalier inside jokes, they never learn what the silence can't convey. Peeling back my skin, they talk about drinks after work, they harvest, and I scream, a kidney to a father, my eyes to a child. It's for a good cause, I tell myself. The nerve endings raw and their movements rough. Synapses don't fire bright enough to blink on a machine. They're still peeling back my skin and laughing about those drinks. But I'm still here. They can never learn what the silence can't convey. End poem.
Beautiful.
Damn you, woman. What was it, varicose drinks? Is that what you said?
What? No. They talk about drinks after work. And
no,
then
no.
It
what,
says
what
you're laughing about those drinks.
You didn't say varicose something?
I didn't say varicose
okay.
anything.
Okay, my bad. I'm rewriting your stuff in unkind fashion. I'm not you. It's okay. After mishearing half of it, I don't even know if I can comment now because I'm bad. But the human aspect of the Frankenstein, I think, is evident in this. You kind of modernized the monster, which I won't say is unusual for you because you know you're very multifaceted like a diamond. So and it's not surprising that you saw that and went that direction for Frankenstein. As much as you want us to believe it's not Frankenstein, it's definitely that. I just like what you did with this. It does
Thank
evoke
you.
A lot of thought. Yeah, there's a lot, you know. Anyway, Adam, say something coherent.
No pressure.
You went to the wrong. No, okay. So I'm probably fucking. Pardon my French. I feel like I'm off. Probably, I get the feeling like this is somebody disembodied, and they're still in their body, kind of. They were an organ donor. And now
mm-hmm.
they're observing in their body and kind of separated also their self being harvested by these doctors talking about like, oh, so if that's kind of what's going on, I got that feel from it. And that just makes it all the more like.
It's like one
it's
of my
like
biggest
eerie.
Fears. It because nobody knows how the brain works. They know areas, and they can map things for individual people, but it's not the same for everybody. Nobody knows how the heck the brain works. Everybody's brain is a little bit different. And so who's to say that brain dead means you can't feel anything or can't hear anything or don't notice anything? And so, you know, I love the idea of organ donation. You know, if I'm going to die, I might as well save some lives while I'm at it, you know? But
yeah.
But the fear is if you are brain dead, how they don't put you under. You know, they just cut you open. They cut you open because you're already sedated. I mean, you're on the breathing machine. So because you can't breathe, they think that, you know, you can't feel. So they're not going to drug up the organs. They don't sedate you. So who's to say you can't feel them taking that bone saw to your breastplate? Who's to say you can't feel them harvesting your skin for burn victims or taking out your eyes? You are not dead until... You can live without your kidney. You can live without for those moments, but until your heart is you know. And here's the thing, they have to keep the heart alive until they take it out. So your heart is still beating, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So for all of that, who in the world can say for certain that they don't feel anything?
If a body doesn't scream in the ER, can it still be amputated?
Well, you know, it freaks me out. The idea of that freaks me out because I know people who've been in comas for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. You know, people are talking about, you know, taking them off machines. They pop open and they can hear everything. Sometimes they don't hear anything, but sometimes they hear everything. So you can't tell me that the possibility that they can't feel isn't real. You know, that it freaks me out.
This is a very blurry line that is unknown for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
have to put in my will. If you're going to harvest my organ, sedate me.
There was one of those. It was like the Twilight Zone, that other horror type thing. I think with the two Baldwins, and they were like playing practical jokes on each other.
It
and,
wasn't
the
Baldwins. It was the Bridges.
Oh, okay, yeah, and they sedated they sedated the guy and made him think that they were operating on him while he was still alive,
It was brilliant.
And then at the end, when the other one had a stroke or whatever and thought he was brain dead, he could still actually feel, think, yeah, I can't. That's
well,
like my
that was
fear.
The realization of exactly what you were talking about. It was like it was meant to be a practical joke, like, ha-ha, and then he finds out that it wasn't so much a joke, that that's what, the way it really works. Yeah, that I thought that one was one of the most brilliant.
I'm bridges. Telling you.
Why do I confuse the bridges with the buildings?
Yeah, there's another one. I think it's a modern day Outer Limits. It's a Vietnam vet who was stepped on a landmine, had his arms and legs blown off. He was screaming for somebody to hear him, that he could feel this, that he's in pain, he's in great pain, but he's unable to talk, he's not conscious. But the voice is Sam Kennison. So I think it's probably a Twilight Zone. But you hit on it by describing when do you stop feeling pain? Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah.
In that state.
Yeah. As far as modern day scientific fears, that was the biggest one. We touched on a lot of my fears today, you know, I don't want to be brain dead and not, you know, anesthetized before they go and harvest all my innards. And I will not ever climb out of an elevator between floors because I will be cut in half and die.
Yes.
I am unlucky. I'm the worst case scenario. I will not tempt fate that way.
Then you'll be crawling around like the girl from the room getting out of the TV.
There you go. So you guys are awesome. And Adam, I know I put you on the spot to read everybody's everything, but you have such a great reading voice. So, you know, and so better you than me. Thank you. You know, I appreciate it. I would much rather listen to you read than read them myself because, you know, I'm not selfish. It's fine. So I really appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you to everybody who wrote for us. And I am so sorry, Phil, that I could not. I got to the studio twice, two different ways, and there was just no audio. But we did get you read on air, and it was fabulous. I do so enjoy your darkness. And you didn't get a chance, Hatter, to read for Deb. I am so sorry. I know you wanted her to read it. I would have let you read it again, but we got all wrapped up in conversation and you know, the anatomy of Fisher Line and whatnot. But you guys are fabulous. And yeah, Hatter's still there. So any last words, Zach? What is it,
Adam? I was just wondering what he referenced Gallo humor.
Gallows humor.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's when you have to make morbid jokes about death. You know, it's a way of desensitizing to it.
I was just making sure. Right.
Yeah.
I like that term. Interesting.
Yeah. So, any last words, Rick?
Hang around for more on gallows humor. This was a lot of fun. When you dug up the topic, I really appreciated it.
I do so love spooky season. I could do spooky season shows all the time because I have so many theories. I love all the ideas on Dracula and Frankenstein and like if I went werewolf, is it just all full moon, no control, or is it full on lichen shapeshifter whenever the heck you want to? You know, like, there are pros and cons. So, yeah, spooky season is just all things fabulous for me. And you guys are awesome and made it such a fun night. My favorite part of these shows is the conversation, so I really appreciate it. All the sideways, everything, I appreciate it all. You guys are awesome, and I will catch you next time. So have a happy rest of your spooky season, and I will see you all soon. Good night, guys, and thank you for hosting with me, Rack.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Call me, Deb.